This week on RSVNB Update, Easter 2024 arrives with the Blooming Borough. We discuss a wonderful holiday quests, rewards, egg hunts, skilling, and RuneScape's continued evolution of holiday events. We also discuss the true value of cosmetic overrides. This is RSVNB Update, episode 978, recorded Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Expectations met. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSVNB Update. Spraying in Easter has come to RuneScape, and Tanis, you're here to discuss this with us, as you are each and every week. Welcome.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us to discuss Easter and a bit of PVM is Pardasius. Welcome.
Thank you.
Of course, the reason you're here is because we wanted to do a bit of a PVM update in terms of what you've been up to since the last monthly bit, and show the folks at Patreon and the wider RSVNB and RuneScape community how things have been going on the learning PVM front, because, you know, no better time to learn with necromancy out there, as well as the changes that were made to combat last month. So that's why you're here this week. But I'm going to issue a big, big thank you right now to our experienced here Patreon members who allow us to do what we do here each and every week. And without them, the podcast would probably be impossible. So I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Ricky A., Rippeth, Runestar, and the Naked Captain. Big, huge thank you goes out to each and every one of them, and you'll hear more about our Patreon offerings a little bit later in the podcast. But if you want to follow along, full show notes can be found at update.show. We also have a Discord at update.show/Discord, and the Friends chat is in-game at Bits Bytes. And you can find me there at Shane1288. Tanis is at Tanis79, and seems like Tanis, we always got people on the show who don't have numbers in their name, like Pernasius.
Well, I bet it's 50-50 if you averaged it out.
Yeah, like, maybe it know. Is. Maybe yeah. It is. Maybe
just good old RNG. 50-50.
Yeah. Okay. Blooming Borough, the Easter event, the new seasonal spring Easter hub, is here in game now until March 18th. Copying and taking a lot of cues from what we had with Christmas. Basically, take that entire idea of a seasonal hub area, add some skilling activities, add a seasonal quest around it, and add some cosmetic rewards. And lo and behold, there we have the community Easter event. First impressions, anyone?
I like it.
Yeah? Okay.
It's... I mean, I had, for the Christmas one, I had everything unlocked other than new stuff. So I really only needed to spend an hour or so there to sort of unlock the new stuff. I did have some stuff I hadn't unlocked from previous events here, so it is taking longer. And I was sort of thinking, I said pre-show that it seemed about the same, but it does take a little bit longer, I would say, to get the tokens, but it makes it more engaging. And, you know, when you've got sort of this 2-week long event, you don't want everyone knocking it all out in a day and then never going there again. So I think balance wise, I think they've sort of probably got it right doing it this way.
And I do want to go into that in some of the activities, because, you know, one of them in particular didn't really seem that intuitive off the top for me. Tanis, where do you land on this?
I've had limited time with this event so far, but with the time that I have had and what I have been able to see, I like it. I mean, it looks nice, right? Like, it looks nice.
Yeah. That was the first thing that I said too, is holy crap, this environment.
Yeah. And you could see how, you know, they added on from, Christmas. It's pretty strung out, and it was very difficult for me to follow along and find things. So
I think I can see why.
Once I figured out how to hunt, I'm like, yep, let's we're gonna rock with this for a while.
Yeah.
But that's my initial kind of impression.
Yeah. I want to start with the environment because, you know, the environment team always is hitting it out of the park, both with how these things are supposed to look in terms of, you know, the art design style and the direction RS3 is going with this, as well as just the implementation of this. And, you know, I wish most of the game world was this bright and cheery, because that's the thing I like the most about it, is that it's bright and it pops. And, you know, you walk from Varrok to Falador, you don't see that. And, you know, granted, we have, you know, new ground textures and new lighting and whatnot that they've been working on, but it doesn't pop nearly as much as this does. Yeah. And, this, you know, granted, seasonal hub, and I really want to see what the next area that would come to the main game would look like under, you know, this group. Because obviously, you know, we had the fort, which is an extension of the wilderness, so kind of dark and gloomy, right? And then, you know, as you go back to that, you have things like Aya and Sentistan, which are have to be themed. But what would something like this, you know, on the world look like if it was, you know, a new area? And the environment team just hit it out of the park with this in terms of, you know, just getting the Easter and spring feeling right, the lighting and even the color palette on here. It has a very beautiful, unique direction to it. And I just want to spend time here for the sake of, you know, taking the environment in, if I'm being honest with this. You know, exactly. I don't really care about the, well, I do care about, like, I do care about the tokens and such, but I would be happy to, you know, just spend time here and just, you know, play this as content. So,
I mean, it wasn't only hit out of the park; it was across the car park as well. It is beautiful, and I just love the little rabbit holes and, you know, little details, like, you know, they've got windows on the roof and, you know, under the trees and things like that. I mean, it is a great area to hang around in, and I'm really enjoying it. And if they could get this kind of detail and color to, you know, the entirety of the game, I mean, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, even you know, the waterworks and whatnot, in terms of what they did with that. Really, really impressed with all that. So,
yep.
Well, we hadn't had a chance to see this kind of stuff. If you think about it, a lot of what we've had environmental wise has been darker.
Yeah, like the fort, the succession stuff. Like you mentioned. Yeah,
and this is just—it's so lively. I would. It makes me want to see what would a 2024 Grove look like, or, you know, something out of that, some kind of,
like, a new area,
who knows?
Or even just, you know, a new area expansion, because I even think this is a level above what we got with Anachronia,
the Western Lands.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, oh, you mean Zaya and
bring it in
and Corin, right?
Yep. Bring it in. It's time.
Yeah. So just 100% on that. But let's move on to the quest right now, because we also got the seasonal quest with this. And, you know, it's, I don't want to say cookie cutter, but it's kind of the same vein as what we had for Christmas, which I think is fine in terms of this. The quest is, of course, called Great Expectations. And the idea behind this is that you're heading off and you're going to come up with three different chocolate recipes to bring to this Easter that are different. And of course, that's the Banoffee chocolate, the fruit and nut chocolate, and Rocky Road chocolate. And then after that, you make the chocolates, and then you have to go do a sampling in Lumbridge. And then based off of that, the Easter Bunny has his say, and you bring it back. And that's effectively a quest complete on this. And, you know, this was actually done by the same J-Mod, Mod Luma, who did the Housing of Parliament Owl Quest, believe it or not. So she's been busy on these sorts of things recently, questing. Favorite chocolate?
Well, I've had Rocky Road, and Fruit and Nut is my favorite in real life, but I want to try that banoffee one. Banana and toffee, caramel. It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be a favorite. I want someone to actually make that in real life. Come on, Cadbury. Pull your finger out.
Tannis?
I have to agree. I mean...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not a big Rocky Roll because I'm not.
I hate bananas. I hate bananas.
Really?
You hate everything good. You hate cheese. You hate bananas.
Like,
God. What are we going to do with this guy?
More roll, Shane. more roll.
I mean, it's not my fault. It's not my fault that if I have bananas,
you eat oats by themselves, don't you, Plain?
You can take what you will from that silence. But okay. I would probably go for the Rocky Road because I don't exactly like the idea of Fruit and Nut either, because you know they do say that it was raisins.
It is.
Yeah. So
yummy.
But overall I feel like this quest is something that, you know, you can kind of just say is, yeah, this is kind of how Easter would be on RuneScape and always was. And I feel like if you take the environment and you take just what's around the edges of it, in particular the quest on this, I feel like you have the hallmarks of a successful Easter event in that it does what it needs to do, is that it brings that warm, comfortable feeling of RuneScape community events and the season we're in approaching Easter, and delivers on that. So I feel like the quest does that, and you know it does it quite well on that. Reward wise, you're looking at a 5,000 cooking XP lamp, 2,000 spring tokens, emotes from the previous Easter events if you didn't already have them, and access to the factory line activity in the Blooming Borough, kind of like how you got access to the wrapping paper thing at the Christmas event, as well as the bunny outfit, which I might add, which is also recolorable and is a cosmetic override. So you don't actually need to wait for this one like you needed to wait for the like for the Christmas one. So
ooh,
I've seen
Shane, you can start your furry collection.
Yep. And everyone's running around in all the different colors. I've got greens and purples and pinks and a yellow one I saw. So people,
you know,
I
thought that exact same thing, that somebody was going to make that comment that, you know, you can start your furry collection with this here.
Of course, Tannis is going to come up with that.
Yeah. And
I did study under the tutelage of one Earth. So, you know.
And it does also, kind of look like, it almost looks like kind of like a onesie, but I guess you can kind of see that there's a bottom part associated with it. I think at that point where it's at, they should have just, you know, made it a full bunny onesie then, because at the top you have kind of like the top teeth and your head comes out where the mouth would be. So, but minor details on that.
Yep.
So
again, just a fun little, I mean, it's more of a sort of a fetch quest type quest, but fun, knocked over in, you know, 10 minutes. Still doesn't beat the Slisky Easter event, but still a very
which
good
one was that again?
That's the one you hated, where they had the white chocolate.
Okay, right, yeah,
they did the Oompa Loompa
song.
Oh,
right, Slisky,
like.
right, of course,
Slisky's Chocolate Factory.
That's
still my favorite.
That one was different.
That's probably why I liked it, because it was so different.
I'm going to say this is probably my favorite Easter then, given everything we've had. Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a very fun one. And as you said, the seasonal hub is really what makes this one special.
So I have to say, I'm going to be the cringe lord here. And I'm going to pick the cringiest Easter, which has actually, when I think about it now, is my favorite Easter. And that's when they abandoned the whole idea of Easter and went to a spring event, a spring festival. And we had the monkey gorilla goddess.
Punch.
And the cabbage.
Oh.
That was... Yeah, and it gave us cabbage face punch. Right? Who doesn't love that lovely little gem?
Yeah, there's a reason...
I actually do enjoy that.
Oh my god. There's actually a reason then why, if I go into the rewards for this one, that cabbage face punch rewards are ones that I haven't actually grabbed, is because I didn't actually like what was on offer with that. So... Let's talk about some of the rewards right now on this here, because you mentioned them, and you know, you talk to the gummy bunny, and it's the gummy bunny that has the store is where you spend your spring tokens, and this is where you can go back and you can get all of the legacy cosmetics for that there. The only thing I was missing in terms outside of the face punch stuff was the butterfly necklace, as well as all the obvious, you know, like the brassican cloaks and whatnot there. So that's where you get the cosmetic overrides, including the legacy ones. And I'd imagine, you know, as time goes on, they'll add more to it, kind of like they said they're going to do with Christmas here. So we do have a collection of 5 new ones here, including a title of the flowers, the gummy surprise eggs that you can buy, which give you a drop on the rare loot table. There's the bunny hungry overhead emote, Leica, the companion, rabbit pet, and the burrow teleport. So those are the things that you can buy with spring tokens. So if you were just wanting to, you know, look at, you know, the spring tokens and see what you would have to buy this year if you had everything unlocked, you'd need 8,000 spring tokens only, which, you know, really isn't that much work considering, you know, you get 2,000 from the quest and then you can just kind of AFK at the other ones for that. So I don't think that's too extreme, and I think I will go through the list here, because there's some apparently other ones that I missed out on. I don't have the Imperial Coronation helmet or the Imperial Coronation torso override either on this one. I'm also missing the chick axe, believe it or not.
How you miss? Well,
yeah, 2019 one.
Yeah, was that from the beta and then something else?
I have no idea. But I'm also missing, as I said, the brassican cloak, the marimbin cloak, and the godless cloak. So you could see what I didn't do there.
And
see, that's specifically why I mentioned, you're talking about face punch on that.
Yeah, I had the marimbin cloak, but I didn't have godless or brassican.
Yeah.
Let me actually go and see what I am missing.
Yeah, so there's those. But there's also, if you go opposite the gummy bundy, you can talk to the nougat bunny, and this is where you trade in your egg points, and this is where you get things like the titles, the egg, you get the Easter trees for the fort, you can get the gothic sleepy overhead emote, the ego dizzy overhead emote, the flower sprout aura that they show, the spring picnic outfit, which has been shown on the news posts and whatnot. So I honestly feel like when we're talking about rewards for this event, you're going to get more out of the egg points rather than the spring tokens, which I think kind of leans into what you were talking about how it feels as though these are a bit slower and the shop is kind of balanced out in that way. So you really only need to grind the activities inside the community hub if you are getting those 8,000, well, I guess 6,000 if you factor in the quest, and then anything you might have missed in previous years, but everything else that you're going to want to get comes from, of course, the egg tokens. So that's I think what we got to, you know, really focus on for this one: the golden egg hunts, the community egg hunts, the Gielinor hunt, and the community hunt on that. Because in addition to the rewards that I mentioned there on that, there's the floral loot beam. And I know, Tanis, you said you didn't have that much time with the update this week. So I think as hard as it is when it comes to these egg hunts, the floral loot beam is probably something you're going to be interested in, because from what I can see, I think this is maybe about as close as you're going to get to the accessible loot beam, with the exception of the Christmas presents.
You got me then. Well, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask Tanis how he found finding the eggs.
Because that's where we go next, is the egg hunt inside the burrow. And, you know, my sense on that is that, for me, somebody who wears glasses and, you know, has corrected vision, I found it kind of difficult to see the eggs.
I haven't found any eggs.
Yeah. And see that's the clincher here on this, is that they're not just on the floor. They can be up in trees. They can be under fences.
I appreciate the ones in the trees, because I used to hide when with my kids, we used to do the Easter egg hunts, and I used to put a couple up in the tree, and my wife at the time used to always tell me off because she didn't want the kids climbing trees. I said, well, that's all part of the fun. So, you know, I do appreciate that. I doing it on my laptop, which I play in sort of low resolution. They are hard to see. I did today's one on the laptop because I did it just before we started the show, which is run at Ultra, and a lot easier to see. But again, for anyone who does have trouble with their eyes, they are difficult because they're hidden sort of in the plants, in the water. There's one on the spinning wheel, sort of tucked in corners and things like that. So, the wiki does have a map up to show the spots of them all.
Yeah.
So if you do struggle, have a look at that, but yeah.
And the way that works is that it's going to be different where they are each and every day, but there is a list of all the different places that they can be. So you can, in effect, just, you know, run through this list and do that at the end of it, and then you'll find your 12th egg. But, you know, I don't even know if you want to be doing the one inside the burrow, because this is the one, isn't it, that awards the hard clue casket. Or the holiday reward casket.
Yes, holiday reward casket out of this. But you also get your points.
Okay, so you do get... So
these
you
are the ones that give you the egg points.
Right, but there's also the Gielinora egg hunt, which gives points as well.
That's the weekly one.
There's that weekly one. And then there's a community one on top of that, which happens on Sunday and hasn't happened yet as per time recording on this.
Yep.
So you can do... basically, one blooming burrow hunt each and every day. You can do one Gielinora egg hunt every week, which comes in on weekly reset. And the Sunday one will be the Gielinora egg hunt. And as for the burrow hunt, as we already talked about, there's a link to that in the wiki, which I'll throw into the show notes on that one. And the same thing for the Gielinora egg hunt. That has you go around, a whole myriad of places, if I'm being honest here. It started with the Lady Lumbridge wreck on Crandor, then it went to the Wizard's Tower, then it went to Ice Mountain, then the Exam Center, then the Party Room, and then we're off to Port Sarum. Then, let's go see what's happening on the Wall of Rock. Then we go to 2023's piece of headline content, the City of Then we go to just outside the World Gate. After that, we take a trip to the Fremenic province near the Slayer Cave. Then to Menaphos, interestingly enough. There's one in there. And then the final one is north of the Necromancer Tower, south of Ardoyan. And that was week one. And then, of course, there's week two, which you'll see next week on there. So... that's the egg hunt that gives things like the spring trees at the fort, that gives the walk override, that gives the outfit, and I think importantly gives the Floral Loop Beam Tannis. I posted a link to that in the chat of the Floral Loop Beam. I don't know if you've been able to.
I did.
Yeah. And
I'm going to have to probably get it or wait until it comes back up. And this is kind of, this is where I'm at with that. I wish, because to me this is the best reward of the event, and
yeah,
I wish this was the quest reward or something, you know, some other way. Because this is how I feel, like I don't want to take away from anyone else, right? And so, like, if it's fun for people in the trees, and that makes sense, like, I don't want to take that away. I just wish I had access to be able to get that particular reward.
It's a pity it's not an actual token that you can sort of buy and then trade to someone.
Yeah, that would be that. Dude, I'd be,
because that would totally help out happy with people that. Like yourself. Yeah,
yeah, totally happy with that.
And people aren't going to like to hear this, but you know, given the fact there's a bond offer out there that allows you to, in effect, you know, buy skill pet ears for one of your skill pets out there. I mean, we're at the point, why not, you know, just sell for some, you know, currency.
Put it on Solomon's store.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, honestly, like, if you swapped around, well, probably my second favorite reward is those skill pet ears, right?
Yeah.
If you swapped them around, I don't think it'd be any less. I mean, I don't think it'd make a difference.
Yeah, and,
right?
And you know, and, to be fair, you can earn the skill pet ears from gameplay, too. They're just more rare.
Right.
Yes,
you said
pre-show,
you got one of those already, right?
I got one in the first 2 hours went on release, but I haven't seen one since. And, you know, this has pretty much been my AFK in a couple of, you know, sort of 3-4 hours a day down here. So I don't know if it's just one you can earn or if you can get multiples. But, yeah, being a token, I would assume you could have multiples. I think on that bond thing you're talking about, you actually get 3 overrides with it anyway, so you'd have to be multiples.
Yeah. A specific skill pet bunny appearance token is it can be found while skilling during the 2024 Easter event or through the marketplace, providing a player has at least 3 of the overrides still locked. If a token is used on a skilling pet that is not owned, a warning is displayed stating the appearance will not be used until the pet is unlocked. It doesn't say anything if you need to use it immediately. But given the fact you can get 3 of them from the bond store, I'm willing to bet that you just went unlucky on that.
Yeah, I either got very, very lucky on the first one or been incredibly unlucky to get any extras.
Yeah, fair. And, you know, with that, I think... I think it just is worth saying that when you look at all this and you look at the way the egg hunt is set up, is that personally for me, I feel like the things I want to get are more associated with the egg hunts than the spring tokens. Do you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not just something you can just AFK this one. You have to be involved in the gameplay, actually participating, running around and hunting. So it sort of makes sense that the better rewards would be in here. But as I said, just for that, just for people like Tannis who do have the trouble. And I mean, I'm not great either. I wear glasses and such, and I struggled the first couple of days, but now I've done it a bit, you know, I'm sort of right, but they need to make them a little bit bigger, a little bit easier to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I had to I think I got up to like egg 8 or 9, and then I was like, okay, I've made a circle of the burrow. It's time to, you know, look this up, right? And then that's when I found it. Oh, it can be in the tree. Oh, it can be in the bottom of the chicken pen. Oh, it can be, you know, on a rock that you might not necessarily think is normally accessible. So
yeah, I think I got to 10 or 11. I think it was one or two I couldn't find. That's when I caved in.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You basically just got to look in places that you normally wouldn't think to look, or that, you know, might not have been traditionally accessible in RuneScape. And, you know, given the fact they're up in trees, you don't normally think to, you know, tilt the camera up and look up into a tree.
Exactly.
So that would be my number one thing to people who are having issues with that, is just, you know, look up into the tree, and maybe from that you'd be able to find
just put it in a little thing, you know, like they do with treasure trails, where it starts beeping you, the sort of hot or not type thing. You can sort of have something you can toggle on or off. So for people who are sort of struggling, they can flick that on and say, oh yeah, I'm near one. It starts sort of beeping at me, so I know to look carefully around this area. I'm not sure how, you know, but yeah, they,
or better yet, just,
I think they need to make it a little more accessible,
or just increase the click areas so that the mouse over highlighting will activate,
and the size of the egg, because they're very small.
Yeah, but I feel like that's all minor in the grand scheme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, still great, still fun.
I want to talk about the actual skilling stuff, but before we do that, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters this week. I'd like to thank Alvaro L, Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvidzel, Chubura, Daniel W, Dominic R, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jeebus, Jesse W, Keski, Lemon Lodge, Ling 01, Luminos, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Rippeth, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Targian, Truth Ray, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, Zant, and Zazicon. Big, huge thank you to everybody out there for allowing us to do what we do here on the podcast. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can head on over to patreon.com/RSBNP and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And if you do that, you gain access to our bonus shows, which we do 1 a month right now. And the interesting thing about this is that these shows are chosen by you guys, and they focus on one topic and talk about that single topic for about an hour, maybe a little bit more in the case of the one we most recently did. But the idea behind this one was that we're going to use this one as an audio-based tutorial to help anybody who's interested get into PVM, which, you know, Necromancy's out, combat update's out, perfect time to do that. And you are a guinea pig, Parnassus. We'll hear more about what you have been doing with that later on in the "What Have We Been Doing" section. But how was the experience for that for you? And has it
really
helped
good
before?
Yeah, definitely helped. Big thanks to Thaxi there, who was he was the teacher, and I was the student. I was the grasshopper. Yeah, no, really helped. So anyone who does struggle a bit, definitely have a listen to that one. Actually goes through it well, explains it well. And explain, I mean, because there were a lot of things I just didn't use and just said, oh, you know, it's not worthwhile. It's only a couple of percent or something. But when you sort of hear Thaxi explain it and then using those things, you go, wow, it actually does make a difference.
Yeah, and the thing we wanted to do with this one is to take it from first principles, from the ground up. Somebody who had just been doing Slayer, for example, or somebody who is comfortable in God Wars Dungeon 1, maybe even God Wars Dungeon 2, and then ask the question, okay, well, how do you go from here? What if you want to kill Telos? What if you want to kill Araxor? What if you want to move on to the Elder God Wars bosses, like Karapak, the Archglacier, and get your Zuck Cape? How do you go about getting ready for that? That's what this monthly bit talks about. So if you're interested in hearing about that, or you just want to hear the perspective on that, if you've already gone through that, you can sign up at patreon.com/RSBNB for $1 a month, and you get access to 60 odd other monthly bits too on top of that, all for that one price. And we also do have two other tiers as well presently open. We have the VIP tier for $3 a month, where you get a Discord chat channel, you get a Discord rank, and you get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. For $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And this also grants you the RSBNB update Christmas card. And, of course, we have the experience tier, which is currently full. But those are the fine people we thanked at the top of the show. But a big, huge thank you goes out to all of our Patreon supporters for allowing us to do what we do here. It means a lot to us. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Burrow activities. We have chocolate mining. We have Cocomancy Hunter. We have making foil, which is smithing. And we have the eggplant conveyor. And, you know, I did these notes earlier today after lunch. And I was like, I wrote eggplant conveyor. And I, you know, opened the show notes before. And I'm like, what am I talking about eggplant for? Like, where was there a conveyor belt with eggplant on it? but it's a plant that makes eggs. So just, you know, that, you know, outside of it all. Looking at the various skill methods out there, what are your guys' favorites?
Hunter.
Okay.
Yeah. Cocomancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You two, Tan, is Hunter.
Hunter, yeah.
Okay.
I can't figure out the other one. It's complicated.
Okay. I have to say I like the chocolate mining. I feel like the chocolate mining is the simplest one because it doesn't necessitate movement.
Hmm. I think there's more tokens out of the Hunter one. Okay. Chocolate mining and Cocomancy seem to be the two easiest ones. But I'm at 197 mil Hunter. Mining, and I'm trying to sort of save that. So Hunter was the way I went there. I did have a go at the eggplant chocolate factory for sort of cooking and crafting. But, yeah, it just... You've got to move from one to the other to make it optimal.
Or rely on having people in there as well who are going to be
doing the other ones.
Going to be doing that. And, you know, there's also the thing where if you do the eggplant one, you are relegated to inside and you don't get to, you know, be part of the environment. So there's that too.
Mm.
And the smithing one is really simple. You take a piece of metal and you, in effect, compound it and compact it down to a piece of foil. I don't think there's much to write home about that one, but that one's also inside. So my vote on this one was for the chocolate mining. And yes, we know everybody. Everybody yearns for the mines. Of course, the meme on that being the children yearn for the mines with Minecraft. I don't know if either of you guys were aware of that. You guys hadn't heard the yearns for the mines meme?
No.
You guys don't play Minecraft?
Nope.
No.
Okay, wow. Okay, I'm the one dating myself here then. Because I'm
53, mate. When Minecraft come out, it was just a kid's game, and I was like, you know, in my 40s.
It's nothing but a kid's game at this point. Like, there's all sorts of weird stuff you can do with that. You know, like, I've gone to space, I've made nuclear reactors in it.
Yeah.
But Minecraft aside, let's talk about why the eggplant is so complicated. It comes down to following instructions from the text, I have to say. But it's also like a question of, if I have two other people next to me, do I, you know, need to be on one of the stations they're on? Or what exactly with this? Like, that's the question that comes up, because, like, the description given right now is that, you know, mix Rocky Road chocolate into bunnies and then have it be wrapped in blue foil, which nobody was on the foil station. So I went to the foil station and chose foil blue. But at the same time, my foil station is sparkling. So does that mean that everybody who is over there should move over and make blue foil? Or what exactly, you know, does that mean is the confusing bit, I think.
Yeah, I just, as I said, I just it was sort of similar to the Halloween event where you were running from the potatoes to the, yeah, you're sort of running around those three different cauldron type things. It seems similar to that. But if everyone's on one station, it slows down your production rate. You need to have sort of an even number across all three. So it's sort of, I found that just a little, yeah, a little too much reliant on other people.
Right. And the question is, what does the sparkling mean? Like, I don't think that was
Yeah.
explained anywhere, was it?
I don't think I saw
Because
anything about the sparkling,
that
so
tells
yeah.
me that, you should just go to those other machines then, right?
Maybe it was sparkling because no one was on it and was saying, hey, this is the optimum. We need people over here to do that.
Well, there's one that's sparkling right now and I'm on it. So my sense is that you can, when the bunny says, make a certain kind of chocolate, you set all the machines to do that. Then I guess if everybody then congregated over to the sparkling machine is where you'd get your extra tokens, if I'm reading this right now. But it's not, immediately intuitive with that.
Yeah.
So, and I think what the unfortunate thing is, I know Zerdones had done some testing on this, is that the most effective point earner is this eggplant conveyor belt thing.
Well, if, yeah, I mean the sort of the more lean forward where you have to watch more should earn more.
Yeah.
Like the hunter one. I mean, once you click on it, you can sort of I can walk away for 3 or 4 minutes because I know it's just going to fill up my inventory. Then I can come back and move on to the next one. Whereas that one you have to sort of move. So you're moving sort of probably every 15 or 30 seconds or whatever it is when it changes.
So what you're
You know,
saying
those
then
ones.
is that the activities outside, mining, hunter, and I guess, smithing inside, are kind of like the lean back
Lean back.
ones,
Yep.
and then the eggplant conveyors, the more lean forward one, where you can also, hyper optimize it and say, once you set the machine to blue to make chocolate eggs with Rocky Road chocolate, you can then go to whichever machine is sparkling, you then get even more points on top of that, would be
Yep.
my way of
That's what it
summarizing
sounds
this, I
like, yeah.
guess. Right. And see, that's the issue with this, is that it's not immediately clear what's going on with that. So,
And your reliance on others.
well, I mean, it's two. So, I mean, you're gonna kind of you can just kind of bounce back and forth between them. They're all within range of each other, and you can just right click them, and it's not too bad on that. So, but yeah, it's gonna be spending much time here then gathering spring tokens, egg
Yeah.
points and the like.
Yeah, and even after I've unlocked everything, I'll probably still hang around because I do like the area. It's a fun little area, and it's sort of only for a couple of weeks, and get some of those that extra egg that can gives the chance of the rare prize. I mean, I won't hit the rare prize. I'm not Shane, but it'll.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, no, Shane's lost his horseshoe. but yeah, it's just a fun environment. I just like looking at it. And now up on the 47-inch screen, it's fantastic.
And to be fair, you mentioned, the ultra rare prize, and the interesting thing about this is that they're not mentioning, if there's going to be a specific, Easter rare, like we had, of course, the orange Halloween mask and the purple Santa hat this year. But given the trend, I think it would be safe to assume that in the next week and a bit, we're going to get something like that in game then.
I would assume, but even if there's not, it's not a big deal to me. It's just fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
If the content's fun, I'll play it. I don't care if it's I'm not getting optimal XP or anything like that, as
Yeah,
long as I'm
because there's
enjoying
nothing,
myself,
like,
you
there's
know?
nothing new from the gummy surprise egg. Like there's nothing new in there this year that's
That we
like
know of.
that's exceedingly rare, like there was the purple Santa hat at Christmas. So, but overall, I think we can call it a happy Easter event, and they seem to have learned what the community wants for holiday events, I'll say. I think that's the best way of putting it, is that now that we've seen these two in a row, there's a sense that, you know, they know which way the community wants to go. And the question then is, well, okay, do we, you know, replace what was there for Halloween last year with something like this? And then I think that's going to, you know, next October, next October, when we truly look at this and see, oh, okay, that's where we were, and this is where we went, then we can, you know, kind of take stock of Jagex's holiday event strategy over the last year and see where things go from there. But
I mean, take this idea and the way this environment is, and let's go Ghostbusters 2, right? Like,
remember that Death House one where we were?
That's what I'm saying.
That's exactly the one I have in mind with that.
I really enjoyed that one. And if you could expand on that and make it sort of into this type of thing, and, you know, it's enjoyable. I mean, I would call this a good success.
Yeah, and you know, like, it's something I want to play to the point where I would happily, you know, do this, take an hour and a half or so out of the day and actually, you know, work on this rather than, you know, pushing a skill to 120 or, you know, beyond that or even sometimes, you know, doing PVM with that. So I think that's what we call a success on that. Well done overall.
Yep.
All right. I do want to bring note and just draw everybody's attention to the Treasure Hunter calendar for this. I know we did this 2 weeks in a row with the overrides that are out there, but starting on the 21st and ending on the 25th of March, the Rainbow Trail event is back. And with this, there is a new Rainbow Dragon Breath override. Which, I mean, we're all eyeing these cosmetic overrides, right? Like, I will say right now, after the show last week or whenever that was, I went out and I spent 700 mil on Fungal Death Swiftness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they found the lane. Now just stay in the lane. Like,
you say that.
Say that.
They'll knock down the barriers and go across the embankment and go head on again.
Yeah. I mean, you know how
every 9 or 12 months they do that.
They motivated Shane to spend 700 mil. This guy, let's just call him Frugal. At best. And they got him to spend 700 mil. This is the right area.
And they also updated Azure Dragon Breath with this one as well.
Yeah, I just want to say though that the Rainbow Dragon Breath, it looks like the super hot breath from the Queen Black Dragon. So I really like that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's.
Regular Dragon Breath also got an update with this too. So it's not just, you know, Treasure Hunter stuff. It's the actual override.
Yep.
And this, you know, brings up a question in my mind, given where we were at with, you know, Fungal Death Swiftness and, you know, the Azure and the orange one that I'm forgetting the name of, and the Fungal Overrides. And I know it would be a lot. My question is, how much would it cost them? Or rather, what kind of cost would we be looking at, I wonder, if they were to put these in somewhere like Solomon's store where you could just buy them outright? Like, how much would we, you know, in effect be dealing with, given the fact that these are like a 0.05% drop chance on Treasure Hunter and, you know, they're going for huge, huge amounts of money already with this, is my question.
I wouldn't mind if they, as long as they let people know that these things, you know, we're giving you this, and in 2 years' time, we're going to chuck it on the store. As long as they let people know about it, I have no issue with them throwing it onto the store and, you know, spending a couple of bonds on it for that.
It would be more than a couple of bonds if you, like, well, if you, yeah, like, you know, if you, I mean, protract out the fact that it's 700 mil and then there was, you know, a certain amount of keys that went into that. Like for example, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that it was a 1% drop, which is probably, you know, based on where we're at with this, probably about 3 to 4 times more common than it actually is. So let's just assume a 1% drop. And what you would be, in effect, looking at that then, is that at around 350 treasure hunter keys, there would be about an 80-odd percent chance that you would have already received that item. So you factor that in. How much does, you know, 300-odd treasure hunter keys cost for that? And I don't know what the key packages are worth at this point in time. It's been a long time since.
But I'm also looking at the people who've done those with the keys have had 2 years of exclusivity with it.
True.
And then going on. True. So you shouldn't be paying the same sort of price.
No.
Or
no.
It's something that comes out, okay, this is going to be a seasonal thing. We're going to do it for a week each season, or every 6 months we will put these things back onto Treasure Hunter. So it gives that opportunity for more to come in, and get people who want to have these things and not just hoard the tokens, to sell at exorbitant prices down the track. I think they need to sort of find the balance between that, letting the people for that exclusivity for the first, 2 or 3 years, and then opening it up to everyone else.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just looking up right now, for the sake of argument, how much a package of Treasure Hunter keys costs, because, I don't do this that often here. So let me just...
One bond gives you 15 keys, so...
Okay, one bond gives you 15. I was talking about, buying in bulk, buying 400.
Oh, yeah, I think the 200 key pack goes for about 50 or 60 bucks, I think.
Oh, really?
Don't quote me on that. I'm not.
The 200 key pack is $70 Canadian.
Mm.
And the 450 key pack is $140 Canadian.
Mm.
So you factor that in and, realize that you would probably have the chance of getting one of these if they were at a 1% drop after, 400-odd keys or so. That's 100, we'll just say 100 US dollars for the sake of argument here. And then, realize that what we're dealing with right now on Treasure Hunter is probably, about 3 to 4 times as rare as that. You're potentially looking at cases where if you wanted to gamble for this, you would need to spend upwards of $300 to $400 on Treasure Hunter keys.
Easily, yeah.
And, hey, if there's whales out there that want to do that, all the power to them. And I think that opens up the really interesting discussion here. Well, what if you made Treasure Hunter all these sorts of cosmetics out there, made them some things that people, really wanted to look at in terms of ability overrides, weapon overrides, outfits, and whatnot, and you made them, rare as heck on there, and, you didn't capitalize on things like smoldering and whatnot. I wonder if that would be a way to earn goodwill with Treasure Hunter.
Would it earn goodwill, though, if they're saying, yeah, I want this, but I'm going to have to spend $400 or $500? I don't think that's getting goodwill. And right. That's why I said I'd like to see it done that way at the start. Give them that 2 year grace period where they've got it exclusive. Then it can go in a Salomon store and for $70, $80, $50, $60, $70, $80.
Whatever. Right, and that's why I highlight the rarity of this to show that you would need to spend that much in keys to have a reasonable chance of getting these.
Wait.
And because of that huge amount, people will say, just sell it outright. I think the expected value for an ability override like this would be at the low end 5 and maybe at the high end $15-$20. And that's what people would expect for that. But I think it have to be an order of magnitude higher for it to make, business sense. And that's why they don't do it. And they do it this way instead.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Because I wouldn't spend 50 bucks on it, but I'd probably spend 15 or 20 bucks. Yeah. Okay. I got a little bit of spare cash. I'll throw $20 down for that. But yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be spending $50 or $60 on it.
Well, if instead of cosmetic overrides, we called them or thought of them as like, oh, I don't know, a ship. I wonder, Shane. You know where I'm thinking.
What but a ship thinking? On your Star Trek game is giving you something other than just a look, isn't it? You're getting sort of
you're getting the powers that are associated with.
But
it.
I'm exactly. talking about how. But I'm talking about how the monetization works. How you can buy a ship for $50, but there are these packs, these rare things, you know, like once a year, they're $200 or $300. Like,
yeah.
And there's a way you can do it with currency too, right, Shane? Yeah. Like, so that's what I'm talking about. Because if you were to just look at each fucking item at $300, $400,
and see, that's what I said, is that when you look at it from that perspective too, I don't know how much Rainbow Dragon Breath is going for, but if we take the fact that I spent, you know, 700 mil on Fungal Death Swiftness, right? And we look at the price of a bond and protract it out that way, bonds are going for about 100 mil, let's just say. That's really seven bonds, and at, you know, $7 odd each, you know, there you go, right? $49, $50. Yeah.
It was right fungal. On. It's right on.
Just looking at Tannis' thing, just imagine if they did. Okay, you've got your regular Dragon Breath, but if you bought the Azure or the Rainbow one, and it gives you, you know, it cuts the cooldown by 10% or gives you a 1% extra hit, that's exactly right. That would people would scream about things like that.
And I feel like if you do that, you would kill the game.
Exactly.
Because I feel like if Jagex monetization was to become even more predatory and even more overpowered than it is right now, no question that would be the next step. You know, a special version of Dragon Breath that you unlock from the store that looks differently, hits a little bit harder, has a little bit of a lower cooldown, and then, boy, we would be having Hero Pass discussions.
Right.
Exactly. To the next magnitude after that, if they did something like that.
And that's why you've
got
to keep them just as cosmetic. You know, I would make them a little less rare so that more people, if they say, okay, it's, what is it? It's 0.5% chance. But if we give you a 1.5% chance, I think more people would spend, you know, I would, if I could guarantee I would have it, you know, in 200 keys, I might buy a 200 key pack to get it.
Right. And
but
see,
when
that's
I'm not
exactly,
guaranteed, I'm never going to do that.
Right. And that's exactly how the lockbox system works on Stowe's, that it's not advertised as this way, but there's a pity point where after you open a certain amount of boxes, you are more likely to get that, you know, grand prize with that. And then once you get that grand prize, you either use it yourself or you can sell it on the exchange. And that's what Tannis was going for here, is that, well, this is kind of the same thing. If we, you know, start floating these cosmetic overrides once a month, it's a much higher cadence than that. And the people who want to, you know, shell out the money and get the XP along the way and do it by way of gambling can do that, and then they keep it, or they sell it on the exchange, and then somebody else buys it, you know, like I did with my Fungal Swiftness. And to be clear, and just to, you know, say how this happened, I spent money that I earned entirely in-game on this, but I could totally see somebody, if, you know, this Rainbow Dragon Breath came up and they really wanted it, but they didn't have the money in-game to do it, I would say, well, you know, if you really want Rainbow Dragon Breath, your best bet is to probably just, you know, go buy a few bonds, chuck those on the exchange, and then use that money to pick this
definitely
up.
I mean, if I were to get this, I wouldn't be gambling for it. I would just be buying it, as you said, buy a few bonds and sell those and get it in game that way.
And for people,
and you're guaranteed to get it that way.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, for people that don't mind, or, you know, to spend a little bit of money on games in general, or if RuneScape is your primary or only game, I mean, you're not, you know, Premiere isn't that much if you think about it over, you know, over a year. So why not give yourself a treat once in a while?
Of course.
Cosmetic, you know, here and there. And yeah, I mean, and for me, like, it's a lot harder to make money in game. Like me, I can I can make $7 way quicker, way easier than I can make 100 mil in game.
And that's exactly the argument that pretty much everybody who plays RS is talking about these days, given the player base.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you know, you're good at PVM. In that case, you know, money's not a problem for you.
Right. So. But I'm not, so that's okay.
Right. And see, that's the thing. And I think it's an interesting reframe when you look at it on that, because everybody sees Treasure Hunter as a gambling thing, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you don't necessarily need to see it as such, in that you could say, you know, well, I have the GP already in game, I can just go buy the scroll. Or I can, you know, spend $35 on this and buy bonds, and then that'll get me the money I need to buy it on the exchange. And then I think where you run into problems with that is when you have cases where that can't happen, like we had with the Halloween event, like we had with Hero Pass. And I think that's probably the red line for a lot of people when it comes to RS3 monetization.
Hmm.
So
it's one of the red lines.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know,
it actually looks like the old movie, like Entrapment, with the lasers and shit.
I mean, God.
The RuneScape community's red lines are pretty, pretty numerous.
Oh, I don't know if I want to defuse that one right now, but okay, let's move on then and talk about what we've been doing, and in particular, you, Parnassius, with your PVM update, because we mentioned to the listeners that we would have that for them. So, you know, post monthly bit, where are you at? How are you feeling with PVM?
Yeah, a lot more comfortable just using those relics, and I got the Berserker ring, all those things that Thaxi told me to. Really good. I went and got my Kiln Cape. That was very simple to get,
obviously. Not too difficult, right?
No, they're very simple to get once I took the spear to take care of the dills. I mean, that was just because I did a stupid thing the first time and never went back. But I have been doing – I went and did Araxi. I did Talos, got my pieces from that. And a big thank you to one of our listeners, Thieves, who took me to Ambassador and darted that for me so I could get the final piece. So I've actually upgraded.
Oh, so that gives you T90 now.
Yeah, I've got the T90 power armor. So I went to, I decided to start doing a bit of Zuck to try and get that done, and I was always dying to the double Jads or the triple Jads.
Yeah, you know. That's going to come down to safe spotting.
Yeah, that's right. And also using, because I am normally just a mouse player, I don't really use keybinds. And, you know, Thaxi's convinced me, no, use your keybind. So I've put food on there and the prayer switching on that and have managed to get up to Jad. So I faced Jad twice.
You mean Zuck, right?
Zuck, sorry. Zuck. faced Zuck twice. Second time got him down to just under 100k, and he just king hit me and took like about 4,000 life points straight off.
From the sounds of it, you probably forgot to resonate or reflect one of the meteors.
On one of the, I just didn't see it come up or whatever. But yeah, it's going well, and I'm actually, instead of being frustrated, I'm actually enjoying it because it's, yeah, okay, it's a little bit more involved, so, you know, playing with keybinds and doing sort of semi-revo rather than full revolution. But very enjoyable. As I said, I mean, took down Araxi the easiest I've ever taken her down. I have fought her before, but that was all pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So going back there and learning that again, and it's just so easy. And taking Talos all the way to phase four, I've only had one or two kills there before just to get the title. And, yeah, again, using the keybinds, using the relic, having all the right gear, and using power armor over tank. Yeah, I have to eat a little bit more, but you can really tell in the way, you know, sort of the hits come down, how much better it is. And even with Zuck, I do still use the tank armor there. I just find that I tried with the power armor, but I was just dying. So I went back to tank.
Yeah.
But I can, you know, I can take him down first go, get him down to that, you know, 550 and the 450, getting him down to those life points, no worries. So I don't have to repeat the repeat the igneous waves, and even doing the flawless run, the second two I can kill in time. The first one, where I was always leaving, you know, two, sometimes three of them alive, I get the last one down to, you know, quarter health. So I think that's just going to be a little bit of timing on my behalf, and I might even get a flawless run done in there.
Yeah, and so, see, that's such an interesting way of looking at it, because we didn't make many changes.
No, just a few little things.
Right.
And it's just like,
And that's one thing I want to stress that's not coming through here right now, is that we were very clear on the monthly bit that it wasn't going to be, you know, a ton of changes, and it wasn't going to be a complete upending in the way that you were playing the game. It was, you know, a quick one, two things here or there that would be changed. And
basically
based
it was
off
the
of that,
relics.
It was, getting, you know, make small incremental changes, get comfortable, push yourself a little bit, some more small incremental changes, and repeat.
Yep. As I said, like things like the relics, I never really worried about that, because I thought, you know, that couple of percent's not going to make a difference, but it does. So using the relics, getting the Reaver's Ring over the other ring I was using, you know, and even the auras, you know, because I've always just been a penance or a vampirism aura, but using, you know, learning to use, okay, use the Aegis or use the Invigorate, those type of things that sort of give you that extra hit, or the Marjorat aura, those things have really helped. So I would advise anyone who struggles a little bit with PVM and want to get into those sort of higher end bosses, definitely have a listen to that podcast, because, you know, Thaxi explains it really easily, very simply, and, you know, tells you the reasons why you're doing this. And those keybinds, I mean, keybinds, I didn't realize just how much easier it is using keybinds than just trying to click on them, as I've always done before.
Yeah, and see, the thing that I'll also make very clear about this is that when we were doing that monthly bit, we, in effect, designed it in such a way that there would be natural breakpoints through it where you could pause and, you know, rewind back and, you know, think about that, maybe, you know, do that section and come back to it. Because we're very aware that it's difficult to follow a video tutorial in the best of times.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're working with audio only, so that was new for us. And, you know, we heard back from some people who had listened to it, and it turned out to, you know, work well for them. So, you know, if you have listened to that and you are a Patreon member, if you have more feedback on that, please do let us know. We do want to hear about that. We want to hear about how you applied these sorts of things. So don't hesitate to, you know, post in the comments, post in the Discord, to reach out to any of us about that. But I'm glad it's working out. Glad it's working out for you.
And if anyone has questions, I mean, they can, you know, contact me in game or contact me on Discord. You know, leave a message. I will eventually get to it when I sign in. Or even, you know, as Shane said, send a question to him and he can ask me and report it back to you as well if need be.
Yeah.
Because, it's amazing how much more fun PVM has become to me just in that week since we've done that.
and that's what we wanted. And you know, that's good because it's a black box, and it's, you know, kind of hard to get into from all that. But Tanis, what have you been up to this week?
You know, just a little bit of the Easter event. You know, mostly Hunter with that, but yeah, it's been a pretty chaotic week for me. So
right,
yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. As for me, obviously, the Easter event and the Easter skilling activities associated with that, but I did break the dry streak on Friday night. 987 kills. I got the Robe of the First Necromancer top piece, which was a new item in the collection log. So I am one item away. One item away from completing the log. I need the lantern.
Oh, okay.
So I've been chipping away on that, but that was just such a big relief to know, know that it's not broken and you're actually going to be getting something eventually.
No, it's not broken. You are broken.
Yeah, between 700 and 950 kills, for some reason, it just doesn't work. There's no drops. So once you get through that barrier, you're done.
Yeah. And, you know, with that, you know, moved on past 1,000 and whatnot, and you know, when time allows in the evening, I'll do, you know, a Raziel hour thereabouts and crank out a couple kills because I'm one item away, so why not complete the log, right?
Yes, definitely.
So and if I do manage to complete that, that will be my first boss log that I have completed.
Very nice.
Which, you know, even more than some of the other, you know, simpler ones out there. So
next up, Karapak.
Yes, which I have talked about before, and that, you know, that was the thing from last week, was able to skip lightning off that. So really enjoyed doing that, but I just need to figure out where I'm going to use ranged, and you know, that's part of the reason why I bought that Fungal Death Swiftness. Is ranged was my first combat style, and it just feels so good having ranged be back where it is on that. So but necromancy aside and content over here aside, we got this little thing called Varlamor on Old School RuneScape this week. What would you guys call an update that adds a new area, adds 4 quests, adds a hunter guild, adds new methods for thieving, mining, and prayer, and adds two new PVM activities? What would you guys call that?
That's an expansion pack.
Yeah.
Or a year's worth of content in RS3.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing that I've been trying to think of. You know, do I call it an expansion or do I not call it an expansion? Because, you know, there has been updates leading up to it and there will be updates after it. So I don't necessarily know it's the expansion in, you know, a typical World of Warcraft or a typical Elder Scrolls Online context for that.
It's a RuneScape expansion where they do the big thing.
Yeah,
and then
it's a big, huge temple content drop. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the old school combat system out there. But I went out and I trained yesterday. And, you know, this is the third time in RuneScape history this has happened. I got the notification that I'd been online too long and I should take a break from my screen.
Damn.
I get that all the time.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen that much for me. But the reason I needed that is that one of the quests actually required 48 Slayer, and the quests there are shaping up to be rather interesting too. With that, imagine, and I'm just going to pivot to the Hunter Guild right now. Imagine for Hunter you had Slayer tasks where you get assigned a specific creature, and then you have to go out and you have to go hunt that creature until you get a rare part from it, then bring it back to the guild for a bit of XP and some rare furs and meats. That's the Hunter Reaper system that was added with this update.
Well, I mean, that would be one solution to just doing the highest level thing that you can do.
Yeah, and see, I'm not sure that it goes far enough to fix the issues with Hunter, and I think we're going to talk about that on this week's show, this week's old school show. We're going to do lots of the PVM stuff this week, though we're not certain if we're going to do Hunter Guild with that or the thieving stuff this week and punt the other stuff to next week on that. But there's lots of interesting thinking about that in terms of, you know, is it enough for Hunter and whatnot? But the thieving stuff there, they add a new piece of thieving content. In effect, burglary. You're breaking into people's houses in Varlamor. And it's a lean back thieving training method, kind of like the Prith Elf thieving, but much more time limited and certainly not as lucrative. So it's the thieving training method for people who don't like blackjacking, just don't like repeatedly clicking things, which I am definitely.
So did you get safe cracking in OS?
You know, if there's going to be one thing that's kind of like safe cracking, it kind of uses a similar mechanic to that when you're in the house, because you go into the house and you, in effect, just AFK at one spot, but then another certain spot inside that house will start blinking with an arrow above it. Then when you mm-hmm. click that thing with the arrow, you'll get a, you know, get a huge drop of XP. So, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. And, you know, I'll encourage anybody who wants the full discussion on that to join us on the Old School show this weekend that goes out on Sundays, because we will definitely be talking about that in terms of everything that it brought.
Legalizing burglary. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what part of it comes down to. But it's just such a unique culture and a unique area expansion on that. And I just kind of wanted to bring that forward because it's spurred me to do a lot of thinking, and I'm not, you know, necessarily ready to make a formal declaration on this, but it's got me thinking a lot about the kind of content that we need in RuneScape 3, and makes me wonder, you know, why we're not seeing that, and what the game would be like if we did receive that sort of content in one way or another. But I've just been thinking about that, and I don't know. I'd be interested to know what everybody else thinks who has been on that. But
I'd love to see something expansive like that. But, I mean, the difference is obviously
it's a different budget and a much different
simpler
scope.
Type of game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, but, oh, hey, I just found an egg. It's in a chest, south of the big tree where you spawn in, and like that's the kind of thing you're looking for. The egg is in a chest, and you can actually, you know, mouse over it and see take golden egg. So there it is. But that's what I've been up to. Let's go through some achievements right now before we wrap the show up. So, starting off, we have Jamandy 52 with 200 mil constitution on March 18th. Balbazard with 99 necromancy on the 16th. Mejquist with 99 invention on the 16th. Terry Dax with 120 slayer, necromancy, and dungeoneering on the 16th. Jamandy 52 with 200 mil divination on the 15th. And Robbie with 200 mil woodcutting on the 15th. Wasn't very many there, so I was actually able to take all those. But congratulations, everyone.
Well done.
All right, moving on to Pick of the Week, and normally Pick of the Week is interesting because we discuss, you know, who's going to do Pick of the Week and whether or not something's there, but, you know, I, as a courtesy, asked you guys if you guys had one, and you guys said no, but I wanted to do this one here, and the Pick of the Week this week is a new iPhone case, or a company that does iPhone and iPad cases, and they're called Bootstrap, and the reason for that is because I used to use the Apple MagSafe leather case. And this past year, they discontinued the leather versions of it and moved to their fine woven materials for their environmental push, which is fine. Apple can do that if they want to. But when it comes down to it at the end of the day, fine woven turned out to be horrid in terms of durability and just, you know, even getting scratches on it, which is weird when you think about fabric. So I was in the market for a new leather iPhone case with this. And, you know, I ran into this company called Bootstrap. And the case that arrived with this actually turned out to be really nice. Really nice. So much so that it was nicer than the Apple case with that. And you know, that's just the general thing, is that everybody always, you know, looks to Apple first for the silicone and, you know, previously leather cases and now fine woven. But there's better stuff out there, especially, you know, if you want to lean into something that's actual leather on it that works with MagSafe. And, you know, there's really not too much to say about it. It's really nice construction, really smooth leather on that. And when you sum it all up at the end of the day, it's probably even a better offering than Apple even had on that. So for anybody who liked the old iPhone leather cases and, you know, realizes you can't get those anymore, Bullstrap at bullstrap.co, makes a really nice case that I'm going to have in the show notes for pick of the week here. And they sell them for all the iPhone models going back to the 12. So no matter which version you have, you can, you know, pick one up and you'll know that it'll work with your phone and work with MagSafe. So you guys have any questions about it? Any questions about the company?
No, I was having a quick look at it here. I like the one with the card holder.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing, is that I will at times use the MagSafe wallet with it, which is what I used to use on the Apple one. And because it's MagSafe, that same sort of thing just works with this one too, which is really nice.
Hmm.
So there's multiple options. You could, I guess they even sell watch bands and whatnot too, if you really wanted to lean into this. But they're an American company. They make their stuff in China. So, you know, just keep that in mind if you're conscious of where you're buying from or where things are manufactured, but it's a nice replacement for what Apple used to have. So that's nice. The pick of the week.
Very good.
Alrighty. Anybody have anything else before we go? Cause I feel like we covered the PVM update, which was very important. And we covered, of course, the, Easter update, but anything else before we go?
No, we've
fried that egg.
It's been a pretty quiet week.
Fried the egg, I get it.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, in any case, you can find the podcast on all the podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. And I did do some checking into it, and Spotify does have the transcripts as well, as does Apple, and both of them seem to be pretty accurate. So it's nice seeing the way they do this and that somebody out there is finally making podcasts searchable, which has been a problem ever since the beginning on this. So it's just nice to see that things have evolved like that. But if you do consume stuff on YouTube and, you know, you might be interested in doing that for this, youtube.com/RSBNB, like and subscribe, greatly helps the show out. But beyond that, I don't think there's much else left to say for this one, except we'll be back next week. You guys good?
All good.
I'm good.
All righty,
man. Happy Skyping all.
Yep. Thanks for being here, both of you. And, of course, to the listeners, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See you.
Bye-bye.